Hey Caffeinators, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the veterinary field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question, comment, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com, or you can find us at our website, vettechcafe.com. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Hello, Caffeinators. Welcome to another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe. Dave, it's Wednesday, January 20th. We're recording this, but we're going to post this a little bit down the road. But how's things going out there for you?
Things are going good down here. We just finished watching the inauguration, so that's all great. Yeah. Not to get political, but yay us.
Yeah.
This is just the couple days before I head out to Asheville to do my first official consulting gig, so I'm really excited about that.
That's pretty cool.
How are things going out there?
It's good. Finally, it's starting to cool back down again. We're actually supposed to get some rain this week, and I couldn't be more excited. But
I'm wanting it to warm up here, and you're wanting it to cool down there.
It's good. I started on my rotations now at the Poison Control Center, so it's kind of it's no longer like Monday through Friday and weekends off. Yeah. It's a few days on, a day off, and that's why I'm off today. So, but it's,
are your training wheels off yet? Are you
yes,
still...
I am. I am live on the phones my entire shift now, and still still have them on to some degree, and that all of my cases I'm still consulting on. I will be for a few months, but everybody is super nice. All the veterinarians and toxicologists that I work with are really great, and all of the coworkers I've interacted with are pretty awesome. So far, still really enjoying it. So
awesome. Yeah. That's great.
So we have a really cool episode today. We've been talking about trying to get this going for a little while, starting like an international series, if you will. And as the Vet Tech Cafe has kind of gone global, which blows my mind. But we've been downloaded in almost, I think, 60 countries now. And
my goodness,
we kind of wanted to expand the discussion to people in other parts, in other countries, in other parts of the world, what it looks like to be a veterinary technician or maybe a veterinary nurse, or if they have a different moniker in their home country.
Well, the stumbling block that we're having, and we found this with a couple other guests we wanted to interview with, is the language barrier, where we have to find people that can speak English because otherwise we're kind of stuck.
Exactly. And I forget about that because I've talked to a couple people like through Instagram or whatever, and it's all translated. And so it's like, this could be really great conversation. But I forget that the technology is there to kind of aid with that. So we're starting out with our neighbors to the north. We're starting out with Canada, but we've got somebody from the UK lined up. We've been talking to somebody in Australia as well, and so hopefully we can kind of sprinkle some of these episodes in, because I think it'll be really fascinating to hear what it looks like to be in our profession in other corners of the globe, I think the main thing for me is how can they influence us? How can we influence them? How can we work more like globally to kind of work on the same problems? Because I'm sure they exist everywhere.
Yeah.
And so, I think there's going to be some really, really fascinating discussion. So I'm super excited. So
let's get at it.
Yeah. So today we have Andrea Steele coming by the Vet Tech Cafe. Andrea graduated with a Bachelor of Science from the University of Guelph, followed by her veterinary technician diploma in Canada as well from the University of Guelph. In 2012, she received her master's degree in veterinary clinical studies with a focus on nosocomial infections in the ICU, which sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
She spent 20 years as an ICU technician at the Ontario Veterinary College teaching hospital, and now supervises that area. She achieved her VTS in emergency and critical care in 2003, is a past president of AVECTIN, and is now the executive secretary, and is also a Recover CPR BLS and ALS instructor. She's lectured literally everywhere, authored, peer-reviewed, and is the co-editor and contributing author of the book Small Animal Emergency and Critical Care for Veterinary Technicians and The Anesthesia and Analgesia of the Critically Ill Dog and Cat. So, Andrea, thank you so much for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe today. What can we get you for a cup of coffee?
Well, geez, I have to say, in honor of the events of today, I'm going to go for an Americano, please.
Oh, okay. I love it.
One of my favorites.
I like it.
We will add that to the menu.
And what is an Americano? Is that just is that espresso with milk? Is that what that is?
It's actually just a watered down espresso.
Okay.
So instead of a regular brewed coffee, it's an espresso, and then they water it down.
Gotcha. Huh. Okay. So, all right. I like it. I like it.
Quite good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I like the idea of in honor of today. That's fantastic.
Well, there you go. Menu. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, we always start out with our guests having them take us through their career path because, you know, everybody's done so many different things to kind of get them to where we are and or where they are in their career. And it's just fascinating. So if you don't mind, take a few minutes, kind of what got you into veterinary medicine, some of the steps along the way, all the way up to what you're doing now.
Sure, absolutely. Hopefully I don't go too long on this. I started out as the kid who always wanted to be the veterinarian. So that was my goal. And of course, I grew up only about an hour away from Guelph, and the University of Guelph, Ontario Veterinary College, was one of the only vet schools in Canada. I think at the time there was four. So that was my goal, was to go to the University of Guelph, get into vet school, become a vet, and, you know, live on my days. And it was interesting because, of course, in the process of doing that, doing my undergrad and working at vet clinics, I met up with a new grad who came and worked at our clinic for quite a period of time. And she's like, Andrea, why don't you become an RVT? And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. You know, I had just been so focused on the veterinarian side of things for so long. And I immediately started doing more research on, you know, we had one RVT at the clinic at the time, and pretty much everyone else were assistants. And I was just amazed, actually. I was like, wow, this is actually really up my alley. So I started doing a little more research, and probably within a couple months, I was applying to vet tech school and got in. And this was just after finishing my undergrad. And I am so happy I made that decision. And I'm so happy she actually mentioned it, because I think a lot of us don't think of the veterinary technology as a career path until you kind of have that eye-opening experience, whether you work with another RVT or CVT or LVT or any of the other acronyms that we have, or you work with somebody who kind of puts a bug in your ear, or perhaps you're already in that mindset that you don't want to become a veterinarian, which I think maybe is becoming a more common thing now. I'm going back quite a few years. And, you know, back then it was the veterinarian. So, you know, I am so happy I made that decision. I had graduated already from university. And so I was a little bit older as a graduate coming out of veterinary technology school. And I had already sort of decided, you know, general practice wasn't really for me. I'd worked there a lot throughout vet tech school as well as university. I really wanted to specialize. So I set my sights on working at the Ontario Veterinary College, and I was just so lucky to get my foot in the door there just with a part-time gig, and fairly quickly managed to get a full-time role in the ICU. And that was after meeting Dr. Carol Matthews, who many people may know. You know, definitely a very high profile member of the American College of Veterinary Emergency and Critical Care, just a wonderful person. And she really encouraged me to pursue specialization. She was just a real big force in the ICU. She would pull us aside and quiz us, and she would, you know, it was just awesome. You learned so much whenever you were working with her, and it really just set me off on a path of emergency and critical care. So we'd had a couple of other technicians back then who had pursued their VTS. They were in the first class, the 1998 group. And so they helped me a lot. And of course, we had a lot of very experienced technicians at the time, and they really just outstanding mentors that you just learned from. And I find you learn from these people just by watching and observing a lot of the time, just how they interact with their patients. And again, just my enthusiasm grew. So I went for my specialty and obtained it in 2003, and I stayed in the ICU. That was honestly, I loved that environment. Our ICU was and still is a sort of split emergency and ICU together. So you did both roles. It wasn't two separate rooms. You know, I worked shift work for 20 years, and I never thought twice about it until maybe I was getting a little older and my body was starting to not like it. But I never lost my enthusiasm. I still love putting in IV catheters. I say, you know, give me a central line any day. Give me arterial lines. I love doing any of those things. Put me on a vent case. And now that I've moved into a supervisory role, I supervise the ICU technicians as well as anesthesia. You know, it's so different because I can't get that hands-on. So it does definitely make it very different for me. But it's nice to be able to try to teach the newer technicians and encourage them to find their passion in this field. And I think that's really where I'm kind of focusing my efforts now.
Gotcha.
We've got a really great team. Yeah.
Awesome.
And you're also very involved in, and I'm going to take a moment here to thank you personally for all the help you've given myself and probably Jeff.
Yes.
In our roles as the credentials chair committee.
Yes.
Well, you guys have done a great job too. So pat yourselves on the back.
I mean, there's so many times where I was like, I'm just going to ask Andrea. And then like within minutes, I have an answer. I'm like, does she ever leave her computer? And does she ever not know the answer to something? but thank you for that. And
Avectin is very near and dear to my heart. I've invested a lot in Avectin, and you know, I really want everything to succeed. So I'm probably micromanage more than anything. But
yeah, but sometimes I mean, what you do is invaluable. Like I can't think time where I haven't thought of you and not thought of Avectin because you're just
synonymous.
So integrated together.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
this is going to be the last time we ask this question.
Yeah.
the last time we're going to ask this question, what has 2020 looked like for you in the veterinary field, and what are you looking forward to in 2021?
Oh, boy. Well, it's definitely been a challenging time.
Yes.
So obviously, most of my experience with it has been in an academic setting. We, of course, went through not a shutdown, but obviously our emergency services continued running. But back in March, we, you know, most of us were sent home and we had a very skeleton staff. And then as we proceeded to kind of flatten the curve a bit, we did open up a bit more. We're doing, of course, the same types of things that everyone else is doing with curbside and trying to keep clients from the building and that type of thing, and just trying to be as diligent as possible about focusing on everyone's health. And we're now back in a shutdown scenario because our cases have started increasing. So just with all the procedures we've put in place, we're not down to skeleton staff, but we are trying to reduce other people in the building as much as possible. So it's been quite a challenging year at work, and certainly personally, I guess it's been an interesting thing, because I've had to, since I'm not on the floor as much as I used to be, I am required to work from home a fair bit, which is certainly interesting with two teenagers in the house, and my husband already works from home in the basement. So it's been an interesting time for sure. And but we've had some good things that have come out of it, sort of some fitness journeys, and we decided we didn't want to go the opposite way and gain a bunch of weight, so we've lost a bunch of weight and trying to keep it off. And yeah, so there's been some good things that have come out of it too, since you do have the opportunity to go for lunchtime walks and that type of thing. So
the numbers there are far different than what we have here in the States, right?
They're very different than what you have in the States, but of course our populations are quite different, so I don't know how
that's true too. Yeah.
You know, I don't know per capita how close we are, but we're in Ontario, I think we have about 16 million people, and we've been having pretty steady 3 to 3,500 cases a day for the last little while. But you know, we're talking about, you know, I hear some of the death figures in the US, and I'm it's staggering, but again, I have to compare it per capita, and we're having maybe 40, 50 deaths a day, which is horrifying to think about, but it's I don't think anything compared to what you're dealing with right now. But they have put us back in a more or less shutdown situation just to try to catch things and get it under control again. So fingers crossed. And of course, our border's closed. So which kind of sucks, but understandable. Our vaccine rollout, I don't think, is as quick as yours right now. I think yours is actually moving much faster than ours.
Oh, really?
We're struggling to get vaccine right now, and we don't really have a clear indication of where veterinary teams are going to play in the rollout. So I assume we're still pretty far down the list.
It's very different here in the States too. Like I've seen people on Facebook posting that they're getting their vaccines, and here in North Carolina, I'm like, when can I get my vaccine? And we're not even in the conversation yet.
North Carolina.
Yeah,
yeah.
And here
it seems to be very state by state. Eh?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, it is.
It is. Here in California, the CVMA, the California Veterinary Medical Association, had done a lot of lobbying to get veterinary staff, veterinary personnel moved up to, I think it's tier 1A, with other healthcare workers. And that was, you know, that came out, and I think that was maybe, I want to say, like 2-3 weeks ago at the most now. But now I think as vaccines have kind of run short supply in some counties, they're starting to move us back down the list. So it's such a fluid situation.
Yeah. I think that's what it's going to be. I mean, it's all going to be contingent on getting the vaccine
exactly,
in
yeah.
stock. Yeah. And we've already apparently been told that we're not going to receive any more for at least a week before we get our... We were supposed to get quite a few doses this week, and there's none to come. So I'm sure there's going to be supply chain issues.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, looking at becoming an RVT in Canada, you kind of said in your career path, what is the education and licensure requirements in Canada? What does that process look like? And is that variable, like province to province?
So it's pretty consistent across the provinces. I know Quebec is probably one of the outliers there as far as they have just a different stream of veterinary technology education. Okay. But I would say our education, except we don't have you guys have the associate's degree, and then what's the next level up?
The bachelor's.
The bachelor, okay. Ours is a diploma program, which would be more akin to an associate's degree, which is a 2 years. And right now, even though we've tried to start it, we have tried to get some 3 or 4 year programs going for a bachelor's degree. But to my knowledge, I don't think any of those attempts have been successful yet.
Gotcha.
To have a bachelor's. So right now, it's generally a 2 year program. There's one college in Ontario that's a 3 year program, and it has a bit more research focus. So the additional year focuses on some of the research component, but for the most part it's a 2 year program minimum. And then in Ontario we write the VTNE as part of our
same exam.
So our Ontario Association of Veterinary Technicians uses the VTNE as their standard, and I believe that's across the board across the provinces for registration status. But to my knowledge, Quebec still doesn't have a true registration process.
Gotcha.
But throughout Canada, just like most of the states, you can practice as a non-registered veterinary technician and call yourself a veterinary technician. You can't say you're licensed or certified or registered, but you can practice as one because we're still considered, at least in Ontario, we are still considered auxiliary staff in our Veterinarians Act.
Okay.
And that's something that the Ontario Association of Veterinary Technicians has really been working hard on with our College of Veterinarians of Ontario to try to push for them to open up that legislation and look at the Veterinarians Act. So there's been a lot of work surrounding that in the last probably 4 years, 5 years, to try to get RVTs specifically written into that act.
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah, I think we're all in the same spot.
Yeah, it's both like sad but also fascinating that we're all kind of working towards the same thing.
And I think we've got the buy-in now of the veterinarians for many years. You know, they really didn't want to see that progression. And I think we've really, between the education of all these groups, and I think there's a mutual understanding that really we need this to move forward.
Right.
And it'll hopefully make their jobs easier as well. So I think we've got a lot of support from the veterinarians now, which we didn't have years past.
Gotcha. And then you have your master's degree as well in veterinary clinical studies. Was that through a university in Canada?
Yep. I did that also at the University of Guelph.
Okay.
Yeah, at the Ontario Veterinary College.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm really pleased I did it. It took forever. I did it as a part-time student. I'm the reason that they now have limits on how long you can actually stay in a program for a part-time. But that came out after I graduated.
And your master's is in veterinary clinical studies. What does that involve?
Oops, sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah, so
this is a dog-friendly cafe.
Yeah. I'm glad. Yeah, she's just on edge. She's waiting to hear something outside. So when I started that again, I was kind of itching to just do a study. And we had been having a lot of enterococcus infections that just seemed strange. They were often enterococcus faecium, which is certainly the worst of the enterococci, but it just seemed we were having ventilator-associated pneumonias, and we were having urinary tract infections and a number of other things going on. And I just really, at the time, wanted to sort of just play around with some of the data and see where it got me. So I spoke with Dr. Matthews, and she's like, well, you have a bachelor's degree. Why don't you do a master's? And I'm like, again, duh, I never even thought of that. So she may have regretted actually saying that to me, given the length of time it took me to complete that project. But I learned a ton and, did a mildly epidemiological type of study following the bacteria that we had isolated, seeing if there was any relationships between patients and timeline. We found over the whole 2-year period that I was collecting data that we had some relationships where we just had these same bacteria. I used genetic fingerprinting in order to see what the strains were. And we found we had the same ones cropping up, which might have just been a very common strain to dogs and cats in our neck of the woods. Or it could have been a hospital associated strain. We did isolate it once from a cage as well. And then we found we had a whole lot of different ones as well, which is just really interesting because you sometimes make assumptions based on their antimicrobial resistance patterns that it's maybe the same bacteria, which is of course concerning from a standpoint of nosocomial infections. Are we giving these infections to patients, or are they actually coming in with it? Right. So it was a pretty cool project. I'm really happy I did it. There's not too many veterinary technicians who go on to do masters, so it was kind of a neat thing. It's becoming more common now. Certainly have quite a few people that are doing it, which is great.
Yeah,
because I do think we can contribute to the body of literature, and I think we have lots to give to
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned in there, I think you referred to it as the Veterinarians Act, which is sounds akin to the Practice Act here in the States. Is there any sort of legal recognition of the VTS credential?
Not at all.
Not at all.
So
okay.
It was born, I think, well, this the actual Veterinarians Act is actually quite old. I believe it's maybe even last reviewed in the 80s. We have something we call the RVT Act, which is a name protection act. So we do have some title protection, but it too was I think it was 1990. If I'm not mistaken, I'm throwing out dates, but again, pre-VTS. So no, there is no, recognition of the VTS. In the current discussions, though, they have been looking at the VTS credentials and sort of working with the scope of practice, trying to assign what an RVT can do and potentially what a VTS can do. But it I think is probably going to be a secondary part of the.
Yeah.
So there may be some recognition of the VTS, but I don't think that they would go to the scope of practice of a VTS at this point.
Gotcha.
Okay. Has that led to like any restrictions on you as to what you can do? Like I realize what we can do as, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but what we can do as VTSs here and RVTs here, is that different because there's no legal recognition of VTSs up there?
I think because we still fall under the veterinarian as far as them being able to delegate everything, whether we're an RVT, a VTS, or even a VT. So if we're a veterinary technician that is not credentialed, then we still can fall under the veterinarian. So I think that's really the conflict there. In Canada, I would say right now there's nothing a VTS can legally do that would be different than an RVT.
Okay.
Gotcha. I'd say just very similar to in the United States, there is a lot of discussion of veterinary nurse or technician practitioners, and there's certainly a lot of discussion that maybe the VTS could be a jumping stone to that. I think very akin to the U.S. as well, but to my knowledge, we haven't really moved forward with that discussion yet.
Well, like we've talked about with some of the other articles that we've talked about in relation to the veterinary nurse practitioner, is that there's steps we have to go before we get to that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're having that same issue up there.
And I would completely agree with that statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just thinking, something that comes up quite often in the VNI that we're dealing with here in America, reciprocity, something that affects both me and Jeff and many of our other listeners. Is there reciprocity that goes in between the provinces?
There is. So we, again, recognize that VTNE part of it.
Okay.
So there are a few steps that Ontario has that I don't believe the other provinces are using just yet. So we have there's a professionalism and ethics workshop that everyone has to complete, as well as some criminal record checks and a few other little hoops. So I think they still have to do that. But as long as they have graduated from a program and they have a VTNE, they, I believe, can transfer everything fairly simply. But they do have to have those steps. We don't have any grandfathering or other options available to people right now.
Got it.
Gotcha. You know, Andrea, I think one of the things that really spurred me to think about having this discussion was when RVT Week here in the U.S. and RVT Month occurred in Canada. And I'm very curious. I'll say, I know the last 4 years, many Americans have been looking north of the border with jealousy
and envy.
Envy. Yes, that's the word I'm looking for, Dave. Thank you. And I know every year when RVT Week in the States comes around, that's another situation that we have that feeling. But what does RVT Month look like in Canada? How did that, not necessarily how did that come to be, but what goes on during RVT Month? What does that look like for RVTs in Canada?
Well, I think it's a great month of recognition. And I have found that a lot of veterinary clinics and veterinarians have really embraced it and really used it as a way to showcase their staff that they have. You know, it's a month. So obviously things are just stretched out a little bit more.
Sure.
I don't think that they, you know, but you see people posting all over social media. The Ontario Veterinary Association, OAVT, the Ontario Association of Veterinary Technicians, is very proactive of trying to highlight some of these things that clinics do for their RVTs. And it's kind of exciting to see some of the really creative things that people come up with. And I think this year was particularly challenging. You know, I'll say that I've always been on the fence that I feel like a month is gratuitous. It came about, I think it was probably about 5 years ago now. And it was just the Ontario Association of Veterinary Technicians. They actually had it decreed by the premier as RVT month. And it's actually been taken up across Canada. So now the Registered Veterinary Technologists and Technicians of Canada, our national organization, have also championed it. So it's kind of grown into this big movement. I like to think that it's really just a way to recognize the contributions of RVTs. And a large part of it too is also about really educating the public. So there's usually a lot of posters and stickers and things people can put on their clinic windows and doors, and they usually do some types of like radio ads and that type of thing, just to make sure the public understands what an RVT is and why every veterinary clinic should have one or 10. You know, so I think it's a great forum to showcase the RVT's role in a veterinary practice.
Gotcha. And so one of the things that just kind of popped into my mind, you mentioned OAVT there. Does each province have its own technician association like OAVT?
Yeah. So most of them our Atlantic provinces are pretty small population-wise. So they have the Eastern Veterinary Technicians Association. And then Quebec does have an association. But again, I'm not sure where they're at with the registration status, because for a long time they weren't registering. It was an association. And then Ontario, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Alberta, BC all have veterinary technician associations, and our territories up north, I just found this out the other day, often join in with BC. They have an option to join in with BC because there's very few RVTs for that matter, and they've got the option to join in with BC. So
gotcha.
Pretty much across Canada.
Cool.
I feel
cool.
Like I need a map for all this, because I'm so uneducated on what goes on up in Canada, like the provinces and the cities and all that stuff. But thinking about like what you said is how the whole month of October is kind of used to showcase RVTs. How is that working? How much of the perception of RVTs is known up in Canada? Because you've said it, I've said it, many of our other guests have said it. Said, what's an RVT? I didn't know that was a thing. How is that working? Does the perception of RVTs up in Canada kind of mirror what's going on down here in the States? Do they have a better perception of them up there?
I think there might be slightly better. I think, again, the OEVT did it. There was a campaign ad. It was probably 3 or 4 years ago, which probably means it was 10 years ago in my mind. But I think it was probably three to five years ago, let's say. They went all out. They had posters in subways and in bus stops, and they had all these radio and TV spots where they had like little cartoon characters sort of explaining what RVTs were. And actually, they kind of went viral. Like, you saw them all over Facebook. Like, everyone was like, look what Ontario's doing. Just a really big education piece. And I mean, they're working on the legislation right now, so that hasn't been as prominent. But I think we all saw a huge benefit from that. And, you know, clients coming in and actually asking for RVTs. And we have all these stickers that say RVT on site, so you can have those on your door. And just ways of showcasing that that clinic does have and utilize their RVTs. So I think we all saw definitely an improvement in the education, and also the education of the veterinarians and the understanding of what we could do. So I do think there's been some benefit. I think it's probably time to do that again, but I do think, like, we actually are, and like everywhere else as well, we're very mirrored to the U.S. We're dealing with an RVT shortage now. You know, we have a finite number that we can graduate each year. They can't grandfather in anymore. So becoming an RVT is contingent on graduating from a program. And I think we can graduate around 200 a year in Ontario. So we're struggling right now because of the growth of the industry and trying to find RVTs that can actually work. So it's, and many, of course, just like in the US, have left the profession, move on to different things. Many go to vet school or they go to nursing school, seems to be a common a common thing. Like, we do have a lot of attrition, so it's really hard to keep up. And I think that's our focus now, is moving towards, like, how do we keep people in the business as opposed to public outreach, just trying to keep people working and keep them in clinics and keep them happy. You know, and fulfilled.
You said in there, you know, about the stickers in the windows for the clinics for RVT on site. We have been looking at doing something like that for a long time now in California as well.
Yeah.
And one of our stumbling blocks has been, does that isolate or maybe diminish or something along those lines the rest of the veterinary staff that aren't credentialed? How do you find, is there any sort of, like, maybe not animosity, but is there any sort of tension between registered veterinary technicians and veterinary technicians up there? Like, is there any sort of pull either way there, or is it that everybody's kind of working together for a common goal?
I would say, like, I think that happens anywhere where there is a bit of an animosity. And I think in any profession where you have credentialed and uncredentialed people working together. But I don't know. I guess I like to think of us as nice Canadians that, you know, we all kind of get along.
I think we like to think of you too as nice Canadians.
But, I do hear that. And I do, you know, certainly, again, I think because of the shortage, veterinarians have no choice right now but to hire uncredentialed staff in many cases. So sure. I think in most cases there has been a fairly clear delineation, and that's part of the reason for the scope of practice project that's happening right now, is also to delineate what can be done by a veterinary assistant versus a RVT. But until we clear up the Veterinarians Act to say that RVTs are actually professionals that work in that facility, right now a veterinarian can delegate to anyone. So it can be their child, it can be their, you know, anyone else who's working at the practice. They can delegate to anyone that they trust to do that procedure. And then there's just some things that are supervised versus unsupervised. So we need to clear that part of it up. But I think, again, until we find a way to create more RVTs, I think we're going to be in a situation where we're just going to have to deal with this a lot longer. But I do agree there can be animosity. And unfortunately, that's with us at the college, that's been a big issue, or perceived issue, I should say. I don't know that it's actually an issue, but, you know, either we have to celebrate all of the groups or we do hospital appreciation or staff appreciation, and we don't necessarily pick out any one group. So that's been the way our management has dealt with that. And instead of RVT month, you know, the celebration is more about a staff appreciation week. And just to try to avoid that, because I do see both sides of the coin.
Sure.
We all do very important tasks within a veterinary clinic. And I personally feel we should identify staff and give everyone their own week. I think that would be the nicer way instead of lumping everyone together. Because again, I think everyone deserves some recognition and the ability to celebrate what it is they do. You know, so I see both sides of the issue. It's a tough one.
Yeah, for sure.
And well, I don't think it's going to get any better.
Right. And thinking of the shortage, you mentioned in there's a limit to how many you can graduate. Is that a legal mandate, or is that just based on space in the school?
It's space in the schools.
Okay,
so
all right.
I think we're up to 11 colleges in Ontario. We don't have a for-profit model like you do in the U.S. So we don't
you
have
say
any
that like
private...
it's a bad thing.
Nope. Nope. It is what it is. I feel bad for technicians that graduate with a lot of debt. But we don't have that option. So we have programs that are affiliated with existing colleges and universities. But we also have Canadian Veterinary Medical Association accreditation, as well as to be a RVT in Ontario, you have to graduate from an Ontario Association of Veterinary Technician accredited program as well. So it adds an extra layer of of accreditation and monitoring of the programs and that type of thing that I think just limits until other universities or colleges take up the program as a potential stream or program within the college, then we're really limited by the amount that we can graduate. So most of the facilities have been built around a certain size class, and it's pretty hard to, you know, you might be able to vary it a couple, but you can't suddenly add extra classes very easily.
Right.
Gotcha.
One of the colleges has moved to a distance model where they do distance for most of the year, and then they do 6 weeks on site in the summer when the other classes aren't there, and do all of their labs and everything in one big fell swoop. And that's been pretty successful and a little bit better about, I think, a little more flexible about the number of graduates they can have from that program. And they've done quite well, actually. And those technicians can continue working, which is a big benefit to the distance type program. So that helps them.
Gotcha. You know, I think when we've interviewed technicians here in the States, and a common question we ask is, what do you see as like a biggest challenge in the profession right now? And a common answer we hear is utilization.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, without having clear scope of practice for RVTs in Canada, I'm sure it's highly variable, you know, clinic to clinic or institution to institution, but how do you feel RVTs up there feel about their utilization in practice?
Definitely a big topic up here as well.
Yeah.
And it is extremely variable. We have people who are like, hey, I do everything, you know, and then others, you know, I took my dog one place a few years ago for surgery, and the vet put in the IV catheter, they intubated the dog, and I was like, whoa, what's happening here? I said to the, I'm like, why don't you guys do, is he doing that just because I'm here, or like, is this your day? And they're like, no, that's just the way he likes to do things. And, you know, I was just like, I was quite shocked by that, because I thought we'd gotten over this hurdle. You know, in academia, like our technicians do everything, you know, they do the technical work, and you know, if they need a central line place, then you call one of the technicians, and you know, we teach the veterinarians how to do these things. But it's a commonplace issue, and I think our veterinarians are much more knowledgeable, much more open to RVTs. And the big thing the Ontario Association of Veterinary Technicians has been doing, they publish a lot of data through surveys and other sources that they, you know, they had one thing called the value of an RVT, and you know, they broke it right down into dollars and cents, how much an RVT can generate for a clinic, how much, you know, if they're allowed to do their job, how much it would save a clinic if the veterinarians aren't doing these things. And it was very well received, and you know, it was amazing seeing some of the dollar and cents figures, what an RVT can do for a practice. And I think that was a big eye-opener for a lot of veterinarians. And I know a number of veterinarians, just even locally, who have really embraced the RVT model and have, you know, they have a great ratio of veterinarians to veterinary technicians. And they, you know, the stuff that those RVTs get to do is just awesome. Like they really are utilized. But we also have, you know, most of Northern Ontario and higher in Canada is very, very rural. Like I think there's only one or two veterinary clinics in all of the Northwest Territories, which is a huge landmass. You know, up there they have very few RBTs, but also, you know, it's just going to be done differently. So we do have a lot of, once you get into the rural side of things, outside of the city centers, I think that's where you'll see a lot of differences in the way RBTs are utilized, or if they even exist in those clinics, because they still can.
Gotcha.
So,
and you mentioned in there academia, you know, after 4 years of my time at Tufts, I was kind of, my eyes were open to, you know, the academic veterinary model in the United States. And you know, I was kind of blown away by how much time, especially when students were in clinics, how much time was focused on technician, what I perceived to be technicians teaching veterinary students to do technician tasks. And is that part, maybe that's just part of the reality and I need to get over that, but is that kind of how it is in Canada as well? Like, I mean, I found it very strange that we were teaching future veterinarians to place IV catheters and teaching them positioning for radiographs, and it felt like it was kind of almost a reversal of roles, or that we were, you know, holding them back, like we should have been teaching them other things instead of things that we should be trained to do. But then I guess the flip side of that is, as you just said, you know, those parts of Canada that are so much more rural, or parts of the states that are the same, that they don't have the opportunity to have a well-trained, well-educated staff. Like, maybe that does need to be part of the curriculum. I don't know. Is it kind of the same up there?
I would say it's very similar. I would also say in recent years, probably the last 3 or 4 years, they've really been evaluating what it is that a graduating veterinarian needs to know. And I would say that we're doing a lot less of many of the technical aspects, which has actually been a little bit hard for us as RBTs to grasp, especially those of us that have been there for a long time, because you're like, well, what do you mean? The students aren't going to do their TPRs and they're not going to give their meds? What are you talking about? They need to learn how to do this. But when you think about it in a more global, you know, perspective, then if they go out there and then they know that their RVTs are going to take care of those things, then they can focus on the things they really need to know. So I do, again, I see both sides of this picture.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
it's really important to really look at that model. And, you know, I think we're looking at the fact that veterinary students are, they're pretty overwhelmed. You know, there's so much information. And, you know, it comes down to whether they can place an IV catheter if they pass their rotation. Well, that seems kind of silly. So, like, let's look at what they actually need to know in order to pass, say, an emergency and critical care rotation versus an anesthesia rotation and that type of thing. And it's probably well beyond taking blood or placing an IV catheter. And I think the big thing with the veterinary students is, you know, there's this attitude, well, if the tech can't get it, I'm going to have to do it. So I need to know how to do it. And sure, I can respect that. But I also think, how about make sure your techs can do it?
Make
sure they have the practice and make sure they have the skills. And there's nothing wrong with a veterinarian. And I've heard many say this over the years. Oh, yeah, no, my RVT will do that because they're going to be way better at this than I am. And that's what I like to hear, because they, you know, again, there's a whole different side of things that they need to know and understand and be able to focus on. And to me, for them to be placing the IV catheters or taking the blood or doing those things seems like such a waste of their valuable time.
Exactly.
So I completely agree with you, Jess. Jeff, it could be a bit of a frustrating part of academia, is finding that fine line of what they need to know. Because a lot of people actually like to do the technical stuff too.
Right.
So they want to do the IV catheter or they want to do that urinary catheter, you know. So, like, you don't want to take away that from them either, because you know, it's nice to have veterinary students that are very enthusiastic and want to learn new things. And it's nice when they also respect learning from a veterinary technician. So, and I feel it does help to encourage a really great sort of relationship when they graduate, if they know they've learned and been respected and they respect veterinary technicians at school, then that's going to carry forward as they practice and help with that model. So I do think being able to model the behavior and be able to learn from very good RVTs is a great way for them to also gain that experience.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Well, I think also, you know, we've talked about this a few other times, is that until there's more standardized, you have to have RVTs, LVTs, CVTs, what have you, mm-hmm. in every clinic, there is going to be a need for doctors to have to do some of that stuff. Because if they've got, you know, 20-year-old kids off the street that want to play with puppies and kittens, they're probably not coming into the job knowing how to place a catheter. So somebody has to know how to do that. You know, eventually, hopefully, if we get more recognition and get more utilization and get more standardization of technicians in the field, that won't be needed in school for doctors. So, you know, it's something that, again, this is a great goal to have. However, there's five or six steps we got to do to get to that point.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge, right? Is just making sure everyone's on board and we're all learning together to come up with a way of identifying each of our roles and the importance of each of our roles.
And I think you said it earlier too, Andrea. I think this is something that's going to take the help of the veterinarians and having them on board and having their support for some of this stuff as well, and understanding our challenges and using their pull and their associations, et cetera, to help move it forward. I think it's going to have to be a total team effort.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think we're there in Ontario. I think I'm quite encouraged by the support that we have of the veterinarians. I think they've realized now how much an RVT can mean to their practice and what they can do for them. And I think they're all looking like, why am I doing this? How do I get away from doing this? So how can I focus on the stuff that's actually going to make me some money so that I can pay everybody? And I think we're, those discussions are happening, and I'm really encouraged by them. I think we're making some headway there. Again, you know, things move at a snail's pace, but I do think we've got that encouragement and that support of the veterinarians now, at least in most part. And I think that is going to be a huge factor in all this legislative reform that's coming forward. So
that's awesome to hear.
Mm-hmm. That's my hope anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that would be great if we could get all that to come to fruition. I know this is more of an American thing, but does the VNI affect you guys up in Canada, or is that something that you're not really involved in?
We're certainly watching it. And I think we have a lot of our RVT members who are fully in support of becoming veterinary nurses. If US does go to it, then I think we would have to make some decisions as to whether that would be something. I know our human nurse associations have strongly spoken out about that in Canada, and certainly have you know, talked about title and all of that. And I don't know if it truly, I think we all do have a fear that they do in Canada truly have title protection, that we would not be able to do that. So I don't think we're jumping to look at it. I think most of us are pretty happy that we have a standardized title for the most part across Canada that can be recognized. And I think that was a really big starting point. But I think that's always been a pervasive goal of the VNI, is also to have a standardized title. You know, you have so many choices in the US. That I think some sort of standardized title, no matter what it ends up being, would be super. And it would certainly make Avectin credentialing much easier.
You're so right on that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
You mentioned in their title protection, what does that look like in Canada for RVTs versus the VTs? Is that generally much of a problem? We use the phrase in the States, title creep or things of that sort, where where maybe, you know, hospital websites don't delineate well or that. Is title protection for RVTs up there much of an issue?
Yeah, so we do have title protection. So we have Bill 193. It's one something three that was probably late 90s, early 2000s, and it does give title protections. No one else can call themselves registered veterinary technicians in Ontario, but we still have the issue of veterinary technicians. So graduates from a veterinary technology program do tend to use the initials VT behind their name and then call themselves veterinary technicians. We don't have an avenue to stop that. So we don't have, there's very few that would call themselves a veterinary assistant. Most would call themselves veterinary technicians. And certainly from a website perspective, I think it happens all the time that people mislabel their technicians, so call them an RVT when they're not, or, you know, call their RVTs veterinary technicians. So there's been a big campaign for RVTs to really use the words registered veterinary technician, and also make sure that your credentials are correct in any public forum, so that, and I think it's, you know, I mean, I get this question a lot with Avectin too, people questioning people's credentials. So OAVT obviously would get a lot of questions as well about whether somebody is a member or whether that they are a registered veterinary technician. And a lot of the time, quite honestly, it's simply that whoever does the website made a mistake. So those things are just usually taken down. But I had one of those happened with one of my own employees where I didn't think she was an RVT, and I found her on another website listed as an RVT, and I'm like, you might want to get that changed. She's like, I can't believe they did that. And I, you know, it had nothing to do with her. It's just somebody didn't know the difference. So they just wrote it that way. Yeah. So I think, you know, similar to the US, no, OAVT can enforce that title protection. So, and they often do. And they have a registry online that you can type in people's names and find out if they actually are a member or not. And they publicly put out there that if there's anyone who's suspended, or if there's any issues or people that are saying that they're RVTs, they'll put it out quite publicly so that people know that those people are an issue.
Gotcha. And I think, Andrea, I know we're getting close to an hour here, so I don't want to take too much more of your time, but I think my last question would be is, are there any challenges that RVTs face in Canada that we wouldn't ordinarily think about here in the States? I mean, I know here we think about, you know, low pay, poor public perception, utilization, things of that sort, title protection, a lot of these things we've talked about. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on that are challenges that RVTs face?
Geez, that's a tough one. I don't know that I can think of anything that would be different than what you face down in the States.
I mean, honestly, I think that's a good thing that we're all kind of fighting the same battles, because I would hope that it's on some level we can all kind of, you know, help each other out and work together and kind of move forward with some of these things, because, you know, I'm actually glad to hear that there might not be anything major that you know, this country's experiencing that we're not, or that they're not, because hopefully we're all fighting the same battles, because that's how we can, I think, one of the big ways we can, you know, work to solve some of these problems.
I completely agree. I think, and, you know, I know that RVTTC and the OAVT have been working with NAVTA quite a bit, so they're all on the same page. And I think, you know, I think if anything, and you have the same problem in the States, is just trying to get everyone on the same page. Like, it would be nice if everything was very clear, that each of the associations have the exact same requirements, so that if I wanted to move to BC tomorrow, I just pick up and go, and I'm an RVT there. You know, like, there would be, you know, and I think it's the exact same in the US, that you don't have that mobility just yet. And, you know, until everyone gets on the same page, that's going to be really hard to achieve. And I do think we're getting close. I think all the associations are sort of looking at the model, and they're very similar now. So it's much easier now to move around. But I do, you know, I think there's room for improvement there. And it would be nice to allow people to move across Canada or down to the US. I know many people have moved to the US and been quite successful, but I don't know what their credentialing process had to be.
Gotcha.
So
it just cracks me up that it's the veterinary technician national exam, but it doesn't provide a national registration or a national credentialing. It's just a piece.
And then there's whatever else they make you do to do it. So and you know, I'm happy that we use the same exam, because I think that does give Ontario a little bit of an edge when it, you know, if they've at least done the VTNE, that's usually the baseline, right? Like, you've written the VTNE, so now you just have to do these extra pieces that our association requires. But I think it just, at least having that, and I don't think the VTNE is honestly a perfect exam, but I do think it's better than nothing. And I think it's a starting point.
It's at least a standardized exam that we all take, and that should be, you know, that means we've all at least to some degree had the same education, and you know, then we should have some mobility that comes with that. And I completely agree.
Yeah. And I do appreciate all of, you know, everyone who does require that. I think that's a a good starting point anyway.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Andrea, thank you so much for your time today. We've taken up almost a full hour of your time.
Sorry. Feel free to cut.
No.
This is all great. All great information. We love having these conversations. And that's kind of the whole goal of this international series that we're trying to do is try and get a look at what the scope of practice is or what the veterinary technician profession looks like in other countries. And, you know, this is kind of the easy first stopping point just north of the border. Yes. I would imagine it's going to be a much different conversation with the United Kingdom, with Australia.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're going to have some fun accents to deal with.
Yes.
Well, so. I mean, your accent is great too. All the boots and all
out
that stuff.
Yes.
Yep.
It's kind of boring.
Great. It's all good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, so we're not I do done. Appreciate you having me. So.
Oh, that's We love having you on. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So before you go, we have one final question. The Vet Tech Cafe Would You Rather question.
Uh-oh.
Are you ready for it?
Oh, sure.
All right. Would you rather have no more Tim Hortons coffee or no more Canadian hockey team in the Olympics?
Oh. Geez, that's a tough one. I'm not really a hockey fan, but I do appreciate when our juniors and even when our men and our women get to the finals and they win gold over the U.S., I do appreciate that.
A little bit of shade there. That's okay.
I don't think they were successful
this year. Love it.
But then there's Tim Hortons, which is a Canadian mainstay as well. So I'm gonna go for I would rather not have the hockey side of things,
because
I'm not a huge hockey fan.
Yeah, if you don't have hockey, you'll still have curling. So,
so true. I probably could have given up curling too, but that's okay. I did curl as a child, but
I find curling fascinating.
It's the weirdest sport ever.
I was in a curling league when I lived in Massachusetts. I absolutely loved it. It was one of the VTSs I worked with at Tufts. She described it ever so eloquently as nerds on ice, and I cannot picture it was so much fun. I do miss that.
I bowled and I did curling as a kid, and you know, I honestly love them both. I don't do either of them now, but I mean, it is a fun but strange sport.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for stopping by the Vet Tech Cafe today and having a cup of Americana with us and kind of shining a light it's fascinating to me to hear that, you know, even north of the border, we fight the same battles. We have some of the same struggles and we're still looking at the same things. And hopefully, as you said, you know, some of your associations are working with NAVTA on some of this stuff. And hopefully we can, you know, continue that forward and keep moving forward on some of these things. So thank
you
very much for your time and insight. And we really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. And I hope you both have a great day and enjoy the next 4 years.
Yes.
I hope.
Yes, thank you. Yes. All right. Well, thanks everybody for coming by the Vet Tech Cafe. Caffeinators, we hope you have a great day and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Hey, Caffeinators. We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As you guys are well aware by now, we often talk about difficult issues that face our profession, and we chat with colleagues and leaders in our field who have strong opinions of these issues. Those opinions expressed by either Dave and I as the hosts or those opinions expressed by our guests are their opinions alone and do not represent any other person, any other business or institution or any other entity with or within the scope of veterinary medicine. If you have any questions relating to this, please feel free to email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. You can check out our website, vettechcafe.com. And please, whatever podcast form you're using to listen to our episodes, like us, follow us there, like us and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And lastly, have a great day, caffeinators. You guys are awesome. Bye, guys.